What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Broadcasting live from the greatest city in the world.
Austin, Texas, baby.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
You guys want to play some twos?
You know what? Actually, we're kind of in the middle of a conversation.
B&E.
What's B&E?
Bucky Godbolt, Aaron Hogan on the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
It is Wednesday on B&E. The Astros are in an 0-1 hole in the Fall Classic. We'll recap that coming up in our headlines. Longhorn 3 days out now to the matchup in Waco with the Baylor Bears. We will continue to preview here from Steve Sarkisian coming up. Texas has to be physically and disciplined and sound on Saturday, my friend.
They are going to get plenty of one-on-ones versus face-to-face with Baylor defenders. On the offensive side, are they just better than Baylor defenders, or are they not? That's what that's going to come down. Are you better than that guy right there? Because Baylor's defense will play. They'll know how to play their defense. They're going to be in certain holes, but are you a better athlete than their athlete one-on-one? That's what it's going to come down to. And I'm thinking that we'll see about the fourth quarter. If Baylor's still playing, you know, the way they're taught to play on their defense and they're there, can you get past them for about 6 or 7 more yards? Do you make that defender miss, or do they tackle you in the hole? Or do you drop balls down the field when you're intimidated down the field, when you're wide open? Can you beat your man-to-man down the field? And can their guy beat you on defense? Because you'll get, as I said, I think you're going to get one-on-ones, E, the way they play their defense. And they're going to say, are you better than we are? Is your guy better than us? You'll get a chance to prove it.
Yeah, it is. Dave Aranda, one of the better defensive minds in all of college football, has been for a while, whether he's a coordinator at Wisconsin and LSU
or
now the head coach.
Are your players better than his players?
Or the head coach at Baylor now, where the Bears are 6-1. We'll get into all that coming up. Let's pay off your B&E fact of the day. Mentioned the Astros now 0-4 in game ones of the World Series. Only one organization is worse, and that would be?
The New York Yankees.
No. No. The other New York team. The New York Mutts.
The Mutts.
The Mutts. Turns out they are 1-5.
Ooh.
0-5 in game ones of World Series. So there you go. Astros 0-4. But how about this little factoid? You know that the Atlanta Braves, in their history in the World Series, are now in series in which they win game one of the World Series, are 2-4 in those series. So, you know, that's something for the Astro fans to look forward to, that the Braves have won a lot of game ones, but that's 6 times they've won game one of a World Series, but they've only won 2 of those series. So Braves back in the Fall Classic for the first time since 1999. And we got to give some credit to my man, Charlie Morton. This dude threw 16 pitches on a broken leg, essentially, last night. This one we put in the archive. Got first batter of the third inning, Yuli Gurriel, hits a grounder back through the box, hits him in the shin, and it actually caromed all the way to the first baseman, Freddie Freeman, for a kind of a weird 1-3 put out.
It didn't seem like much.
Yeah,
when it hit him.
Well, because he acted like it didn't happen.
Right, because he ran over there to cover first base.
Yeah, Freeman, you know, stepped on first, and it was a 1-3 put out to start the frame. And Morton, you know, said it hurt a little bit, but he climbed back on the mound, proceeded to get Chaz McCormick out and strike out Martin Maldonado through 16 pitches and went in. And they said, hey, your leg's broken. Hey, Charlie, your leg's broken. We've got to take you out. And Charlie's like, no, I'm going back.
He had 3 more outs.
Hey, Hacksaw Reynolds, what are you doing here? What are we doing here? Was this Ronnie Lott kind of stuff? What are we playing football here? He went back. He wanted to go back out. He said he couldn't run. He said it hurt to run, but it didn't hurt to pitch. That would have been a story if he'd run him back out there. But they took him out, and the Astros still lost the game. So, tough guy. Tough guy, 37-year-old Charlie Morton. Hey, let's get some headlines and trending topics, including that ball game last night, plus a big night in the NBA. Let's hit it. UBO Business Services brings it to you. Yeah, it didn't take long for the Braves to get the jump on the Astros. How about the third pitch of the game? Third pitch of the game, Jorge Soler, the leadoff man, belted a home run into the Crawford boxes. First time that's ever happened in the World Series. The first batter of the series to go deep. The Astros were down 1-0. They went on to add another run, the Braves, in that first inning. They added another run in the second. 2 more in the third. That came on an Adam Duvall 2-run homer, and that was it for Framber Valdez. He struggled, to say the least, with his command. The Astros starting pitcher allowed 5 runs on 8 hits in just 2 innings. Game 2 is tonight. Houston's going to hand the ball to the right-hander, Jose Urquidy. Atlanta will counter with the left-hander, Max Fried. As we mentioned, not all good news for the Braves. Charlie Morton now out for the rest of the series with that crack in his tibia. He will be out, and they're going to have to find other answers there for the rest of this seven-game series. The college football Longhorns continue to prep for their trip to Waco on Saturday, facing 16th-ranked Baylor. Dave Aranda is the head coach there, second-year man. Baylor Bears are 6-1. Built on a stout defense and the Big 12's leading rushing attack under first-year offense coordinator Jeff Grimes. His wide zone offense ranks ninth nationally, rushing yards per game at nearly 240 per. Texas head coach Steve Sarkisian knows the Longhorns have to be gap sound and disciplined coming up on Saturday.
They believe in the outside zone. They run it well. And the whole idea behind that scheme is, you know, when you get out of your gap, that's when the ball gets creased. And so it's going to be really critical for us this weekend in the run game to place, you know, really disciplined in our run fits. And then ultimately you got to defeat the block and make the tackle. So they stress you that way. I feel good about the guys at least recognizing last week where it got out of whack. And so better week last week of understanding it in practice. And then now we got to get to it this week as we go.
11 a.m. this Saturday, 7 a.m. pregame right here on the Horn and across the Austin Radio Network, Texas and Baylor. All three Texas teams in action last night in the NBA. Actually, two of them squared off, the I-45 rivalry. Mavericks hosting Houston last night. Dallas wins it in Jason Kidd's home coaching debut. Luka Doncic led the way with 26 points, 14 boards, and a 116-106 victory for Dallas. Good one in San Antonio last night. Spurs came up on the short end of a loss in overtime to the Lakers, 125-121 in front of a sellout crowd in San Antonio. Anthony Davis, 35. Russell Westbrook, 33. In that victory. And in the NFL, Week 7 opens up in the National Football League tomorrow night. And a good one, Green Bay at 6-1 at 7-0 Arizona. But the Packers are going to be without their two top receivers, Devontae Adams and Alan Lazard. Top targets for Aaron Rodgers, both on the COVID restricted list, will not play in that game.
This segment brought to you by UBO Business Services. Great people, great service, endless possibilities. That's UBO Business Services. Visit them at ubeo.com.
So do you believe that Texas has better individual players?
Baylor?
Forget the scheme, but individual guys, tough guys, that'll be around in the fourth quarter because they understand their scheme and they believe in what they do. And if they get you in the hole, you're not going to make them miss. Or is Texas going to make them miss when they get their one-on-one opportunities?
I think they do. I mean, I think I've watched Texas play quality football against, you know, a pair of good teams in Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, but yeah, they wilt in the fourth quarter. Will that trend continue, or did they do something about it in the bye week? Can they be mentally stronger, you know, and finish football games? I will give.
It won't be just the mental here. It'll be the physical with Dave Aranda's defense in that fourth quarter.
Sure will. It'll be a four quarter football game.
And, yeah.
I know people get frustrated saying the Longhorns played three good quarters against Oklahoma State, but I thought they did, especially on the defensive side. The defense is one people are most worried about against this Baylor rushing attack. But if you go back in Oklahoma State going into the fourth quarter,
they keep you out of the end zone.
Yeah, and then scored a touchdown offensively. Oklahoma State.
You got to find a way offensively to wear out the other side too.
Well, think about the running back Jaylen Warren for Oklahoma State going into the fourth quarter had 21 carries for like 79 yards.
He ended up with a bunch.
Texas had done a nice job and kept him out of the end zone. The pick six was huge and crucial to where the scoreboard.
And not getting first downs killed you because then they put the ball in his hands a lot.
Then fourth quarter.
Yes.
Offense keeps going three and out and sputtering, and here comes Jaylen Warren. Puts 100 yards on the board in the fourth quarter alone.
That's my thoughts on the running back that Texas has. That's where Bijan has to. He shouldn't be getting less carries. He should get more touches.
And in that, I know we here are close to it, so we understand the offensive line issues that Sark and Kyle Flood are dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I mean, say it out loud. If you're just looking at it, 30,000 feet looking down, Sark, with double-digit leads back-to-back weeks with the nation's best running back, couldn't close the game out.
Right.
This becomes, if I'm Sark, I mean, this got to be, okay, how do we got to have this mindset.
Yeah, and he shouldn't be getting less carries or less touches.
Yeah, how do we?
He should be getting more touches.
We should. I mean, but again, you go back and watch the game, they only ran 21 plays after that first drive of the half. So he couldn't get a lot of touches because they didn't have a lot of plays to give him the ball. That's 21 total plays in a.
That's supposed to be your specialty. Then scheme that into
right.
Where they get first downs and move the chains.
So then that has to be it, right? I can't not hold leads with the best running back in the country. Whatever right. my offensive line issues are, I've got the best player at the position.
And he's done enough to be the best player in the, right now. So how did that happen that all of a sudden now it can't happen? No, it's got to happen.
It's great that we get him off in the first half. We got to get him off. That's where he's got to shine. That's where we. That needs to be our identity, pounding the rock and finishing games. Maybe you use Roshan.
For as long as you have him, that's where it's going to be.
Well, and you know, arguably now that Jordan Whittington is hurt, your two best players on offense are your running back and your backup running back, Roshan Johnson. Get him the ball. Figure out ways, whether it's in the passing game. We saw on Monday night the Saints, Alvin Kamara. You know, we know that Seattle was not going to let him just line up and run the ball, so Sean Payton found a way to throwing the ball a number of times. I think he had, what, 9 or 10 catches in the game against the Seahawks the other night, Alvin Kamara. Get Bijan Robinson catch the ball.
We've seen that.
Use him in that. You can't continue to have the best player at the position in the country and not be able to close out football games and get first downs. Close out football games.
Absolutely.
Because you can say you don't have talent, but you have the best player in the country right there.
You're the best player on the field.
Find a way to have him help you finish out these football games. And we'll continue to talk about it. We'll dive into our coach's corner here coming up here from Coach Sark on what the fourth quarter changes could be. Also more on the World Series last night. What are the Astros going to do to bounce back tonight? But first, let me tell you about our friends at Specs. Wine, spirits, and finer foods. They bring you to the Specs text line at 512-337-3776. You like going over there and having those fresh sandwiches.
Yes, for sure.
And you know what? You'll be surprised at the price tag. You try to go eat fast food, you know, versus going over to Specs and get one of those fresh sandwiches. They
got great cheeses if you're a cheese
phenomenal,
person. I am.
Phenomenal. Go do that. Go over to Specs. And, of course, if you're having friends over to watch the Astros game in the World Series, watching football games or whatever you're doing, Halloween parties this weekend, get over to Specs. They've got the wines. They've got the spirits. They've got the finer foods. It's everything you need. And as we said, you can shop in the store and get to meet the great people there. They're going to guide you to the perfect cocktails for your Halloween party this weekend and the perfect wine to pair with a great meal. The selection is through the roof. The prices are the lowest you'll find. And they also can do it curbside, and they'll deliver right to your door. You don't have to leave your office. You can order it all.
My lady's at Austin Canned Cocktails. Got all their stuff there, too.
Austin Cocktails, looking yes, good indeed. At Specs. Wine, spirits, and finer foods, locally owned and operated. Great people since 1962. Find the location nearest you online at specsonline.com. All right, Buck, Astros lose Framber Valdez. You know this, if you watch the Astros, he can't pitch behind. He's got, strike one is the most important pitch for all pitchers, but Framber in particular, when he's pitching behind.
He had a lot of 0-2s.
Or 2-0s.
2-0s,
two and
yeah.
O's. I mean,
yeah,
the first batter, ball, home run, and he threw it right down the middle.
That dude jumped all over that pitch.
Well, if you watch that first inning, they scored two runs, and they had a couple of hits in there, including the home run. They were all on counts that were for Framber was behind. The outs he got, Freddie Freeman got ahead of him, had him chase a sweeping breaking ball in the dirt in an 0-2 count, and Freddie Freeman got himself out in that spot. That's how Framber has to pitch. That's how he pitched in the great start he had against Boston at Fenway Park in the LCS. And he's got to be on point throwing that sinker, throwing those ground balls, and that heavy ball that he throws. But he's got to be in the head of the count to get them to bite at it. He was not last night. He admitted after the game that he didn't, through a translator, he said, this is my first start in the World Series. I tried to control it, but I was a little bit amped up. The adrenaline was pumping, and that's kind of how that goes. You're just so excited and so, into the moment. And
a lot of pitches you thought you could get away with.
Yeah, it's one of those things
where
you want to calm down. But Astros also have to get the bats going. Despite Framber's struggles, they were still in that game, and there were some opportunities to.
I thought in the first inning they were going to come back.
Yeah, they loaded the bases, and Kyle Tucker grounded out. They had some chances to get back in it and not getting a big swing. And the two guys that are struggling the most for Houston right now are Jose Altuve at the top and Alex Bregman in the three hole. I mean, those two guys in that first inning, Bregman looked at a ball on a favorable hitter's count.
Yeah, they were giving him Charlie was giving him some opportunities to hit the ball.
Well, if you know Charlie Morton, you got to get him in the first inning. He is his ERA first inning to beyond in his career is pretty dramatic. And the Astros had their chances, and I thought the biggest chance missed was Alex Bregman on a 3-1 count. Just watched a ball right down the middle. It was kind of the same pitch that Soler hit for a home run to start the game. It's like, Bregman, what are we doing? Got runners on. Ball's right over the.
I know Correa walked, but he seems like a guy who has the bat on his shoulders looking for walks.
I thought Correa had a great at bat, though, because they walked Yordan, and then Correa fell in the hole 0-2, mm-hmm. And he came back and battled and took the walk, which brought Tucker up, which I like the lefty matchup against Charlie Morton, and he grounded out into the shift there, and that inning ended. But the Astros had other opportunities throughout the course of the ball game to put a crooked number on the board and at least make it a ball game, but never really could. Added one other run later in the ball game. So 6-2 final, Astros lose. It'll be Jose Urquidy tonight against the lefty Max Fried. If you're looking for optimism for Houston, Fried, you know, the Astros have feasted this year on left-handed pitching. If you look at their team batting average and runs scored per game against lefties, this is a good matchup for Houston. Even though Fried has pitched really good, Houston devours left-handed pitching typically. We'll see if that holds tonight. And Jose Urquidy has actually been really good in Minute Maid Park at home. So we'll see that ball game. Game two tonight, just after 7 o'clock. Let's dive into our Coach's Corner. It's brought to you by Audio Visual Consultations. AVconsultations.com. That's where Bucky watches his big 85-inch television, all the games and all the fun. And you're going to make your Gold Star picks and your bet with Tom McKay coming up.
Yes.
On Friday. You feeling good?
Feeling great.
You're 5-1 in your last 2 weeks.
I'm feeling Buffalo, college football and NFL.
Ooh, Buffalo squared.
Yeah.
The Buffalo Soldiers. I like it. Hey, so can we hear from Steve Sarkisian? This was interesting. You know, from the press conference on Monday, we've talked about the fourth quarter and how can you close a game with the best player in the country. And here's Sark kind of self-evaluating, talking about his tendency in the fourth quarter is to, you know, maybe go a little conservative, maybe try to find something that they know that they can do, and then maybe he needs to change that. Zay's going to find that cut for us. But, you know, that's, you know, there's the player execution part of this, winning individual battles, offensive line not jumping off sides, not fumbling snaps. I mean, these kind of things get you against the chains and lead to the lack of offensive continuity. The other part of that, Buck, the coaches have to, you know, put them in position and try to fool the defense
a
little bit.
That's supposed to be his specialty.
It is, and we see him do it a lot on that opening script and to start games and, you know, the scouting and how you're going to attack a defense to start football games, that's got to carry into the fourth. Zay, do we have this? Here's Sark talking about, you know, maybe he needs to change his philosophy come fourth quarter time.
I think we've been adequate. You know, we've had moments where we've really come out of halftime and done some really cool things, come out of the locker room and executed in all three phases and performed. You know, I think we've had other times when we have it, and we've got hurt on a couple plays that have caused issues, whether they've been on either side of the ball or on special teams. And I mean, that's football to some degree. I mean, they're good coaches too, the teams we play. But the point of it, like, to me, I think one area where we've had to adjust some, especially offensively moving forward, is, you know, sometimes when things don't go right, my initial natural instinct is to give them something for our players that I know they do really good that may not be as elaborate of a play call. When in reality, when we do some things that are a little more elaborate, when you look at the tape, even later in game, we execute them pretty well. And I probably didn't give our players enough credit to do that. And so I think that we'll stay in that kind of frame of mind because you trust the players in our preparation. And you know, that is something that I give them credit in their preparation to do it. We see it in the first half, the way we play. We see it coming out of the locker room. And I just think we need to kind of stay down that course and line of thinking into the fourth quarter, even after if we have a couple tough series that don't go our way.
Yeah, I mean, because eventually the players are going to look at you, Coach, and say, you're going to run that play again?
Yeah, that they know is coming.
Yeah, they know it's coming, Coach. I've had this ball like three times on this same exact play. We haven't done anything from the second quarter on to change up, whether it's the motion or not. We're going to run the same play. That same dude's going to be standing in the hole again.
Yeah, and you know, there's when we've seen this, right? Sark just admitting
he gets conservative. He leans back on the plays that he knows that they shouldn't be jumping off sides and that they can fundamentally run. But so does the other guys.
Yeah, so, and think about the games where this stands out the most, right? The Arkansas game, the whole game, where there wasn't a lot of motion, there wasn't a lot of creativity offensively, and Sark's just trying to coax first down.
That was
down.
Just surviving there. That was survival.
And you know, what do we see beyond that? They come back out and blow out Rice and Texas Tech, and they've got all kinds of fly motion and all the Sark offense, the eye candy you like to see.
Right.
And they're getting off and running the ball. And then we saw it again, of course, in the fourth quarter against Oklahoma, and we saw it again in the fourth quarter against Oklahoma State, where things get stale, and all of a sudden it looks like a real predictable And it is, right? And that's you're playing right into the defense's hands because they've flipped the momentum.
And they know that you feel comfortable running those plays.
They're playing downhill, and here they come, and, oh, we've seen this play before. And, you know, that's where, you know, the players maybe that leads to some of the lack of execution because they understand, well, this is about to be a predictable play, right? We need – give us something here,
yeah,
coach.
They know what's going on offense too.
And two types of plays you've talked about a lot, the screen game. In those teams, when the team's coming at you downhill and they're feeling like they got you cornered, you know, run a screen, run a draw play, do something to let that aggressiveness, you know, run a reverse, something that uses that aggressiveness against them. We haven't seen Sark pull that out of the bag of tricks yet.
Well, one thing we haven't seen him do is use that speed of the one running back who very seldom gets used as a running back. Then stick him in a slot and have him get down the field against this two deep and keep those guys back there. You can run off that. You don't necessarily have to throw them the ball, but my God, make those safeties, those two high safeties, make them have to at least backpedal a couple steps and not sit there in the hole, get ready to attack your off tackle plays.
It says Hogan sounds like Joe Buck. Don't be a jinx. Joe Buck.
No, it's just seeing what he sees once again.
I think he's talking about the baseball conversation about the Astros being good against left-handed pitching. I think. But can I just say this
real quick? What's longer, a half or 5/8?
Yeah, thank you, Joe. I'll just say that I think John Smoltz is as good a color analyst as there is in any sport, in my opinion. And I know he played for the Braves, and I enjoy as a baseball fan listening to John Smoltz break a baseball game. Mm-hmm. I think he's as good as there is in any sport. You know, we talk about Romo and football and some of these other guys. John Smoltz is tremendous. I can take or leave Joe Buck. I understand a lot of people hate Joe Buck, and he's kind of a polar guy. I love John Smoltz. I think he does a tremendous job analyzing pitching, lineups, how pitchers are going to attack a hitter, how hitters are going to attack back. I just think he does a really good job. So props to John Smoltz, who was an Astro killer. I mean, he's a lot of teams killer back in the day for the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah, I mean, that you had to be satisfied with listening to that broadcast last night. I thought it was good.
No, I could listen to Smoltz any day. I just think he does a great job. I love baseball. I love the intricacies of baseball. He does a really nice job of speaking those, you know, the nuances mm-hmm. in layman's terms so that, he's kind of pitching. He's kind of walking through the game like a pitcher would and how to attack. And he's really, really good, I believe.
Yeah, but Joe Buck's pretty good, too. I mean, people just don't.
You know, well, a lot of people hate Joe Buck. Like, he's like the band Rush, a rock and roll band. People either like Joe Buck or you hate him. There's no, like, middle ground here. And I'm the guy in the middle. I don't know how that is. I know there's no middle ground, but I can take him or leave him. I think he does a good job with Aikman on – by the way, Aikman does a good job, too, on football. But we'll come back. Your thoughts on that, the baseball, the football, all of the Wednesday conversations as we drag you up over the hump and get you into a tremendous sports week that continues tonight with Game 2 of that World Series.
I'll say this about the Horns before we go. If I do have a one-on-one, I want that one-on-one to be Bijan against any of their defenders. Linebackers – defensive backs, safeties, I want his one-on-one because I trust that he'll beat the one-on-one.
Yeah.
If they're in the hole, he's gonna spin or do something or stiff arm somebody that he's going to get a little bit extra.
Yeah. I mean,
there's not going to be gaping holes for him to get through in the fourth quarter.
You got to scheme sub up to get the ball into the hands of five, seven, and eight, right? Get the ball into your playmaker's hands. In big spots, has to be a conversation.
Well, they're not going to let you get down the field with eight. Let you get down the field early in the games.
We'll come back to that little screen that you first play of the game against Oklahoma.
Sure.
That was a play in space for eight where, because of formation and a play action, you had an open – you created an opportunity for Xavier Worthy to make a play, and he did and took it 75 yards for a touchdown because there was only one guy out there. Those are the kind of things you're talking about, I think, in those spots and win your one-on-one battle. All right, we'll take your thoughts on the game coming. This says, don't coach scared. Yeah, that's kind of what Sark is saying right there. We'll be back with you. Also, the hot or not topics for the end of the hour. Howard Griffith talks Big Ten football in the 8 o'clock hour, big week in the Big Ten, Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, Penn State, and Chris Beard, head basketball coach at Texas, joins our show at 8:25 next hour. It's B&E on the Horn.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
B&A with you on a Wednesday. Cold front or strong cool front moving through overnight. I actually drove into work through it as the temperatures were dropping from the upper 70s down to the 60s and the lower 60s. all on my 14-mile commute from South Austin here, Buck. And pouring down rain when I got here. But rain this morning, but beautiful today. I'm looking at the forecast. By 9 o'clock, it's going to be 64 and sunny and warm up to about 73, maybe 75 at a top out today, about 4 o'clock. That'll be the case tomorrow, Friday, and into Saturday. And, you know, when we get ready for Texas and Baylor on Saturday morning, it'll be in the middle 40s to start your Saturday morning.
Good stuff.
Just in time for
brunch. Brunch with the horns.
Brunch with the horns. Grab a pullover.
Absolutely.
And your
there'll be a lot of people making that trek up by 35 into that section of town too.
Make your plan because it's a mess through 35 right there at McLean Stadium with the construction. You may have to come in the backside of that stadium. I don't know how. I've never been.
That's
to
your Waze
there.
Deal going the back way, right? That tells
oh,
you
man.
How to get back.
Waze
to.
App, rock and roll, man. Takes you around.
There's
stuff.
A little spot that you go around there and get back on I-35 again.
Yes.
I've gone.
Yeah, there's a little loop kind of thing out to the east of if you're going north, and then there's another trick way coming back through south. But Texas at Baylor on Saturday, part of the college football weekend. Astros in an 0-1 hole in the World Series. How about Jose Altuve? 3 for his neck last 28. Since the start of the ALCS, he's got 3 hits and 28 at-bats. Safe to say they got to get 27 going at the
for
top
sure.
of the order. And I would say the same for Alex Bregman. I think, you know, those are key cogs, obviously, right? That's your leadoff man who's your igniter. And then your three-hole hitter is you're going to put a big inning together ahead of Yordan Alvarez and Carlos Correa. You know, Bregman's got to start swinging a stick here or this won't be a long series because the Braves can pitch and, you know, they lose Charlie Morton. But you got to get those two guys going because, as you saw last night, they're going to be extremely careful with Yordan Alvarez. They are not going to give him much to hit. With that said, you know, the other guys are going to have to pick that up, and it would be namely the top of the order and then Bregman. But the Astros in an 0-1 hole, and the series is underway. All right, some text coming in on the Specs text line. This is almost like Coach Sark is coaching not to lose instead of coaching to win. Sometimes with play calling. Well, I think that is it. That's why we played that in our coach's corner, that cut. I think it takes you into the mind of Sark a little bit. And what he is saying is exactly what is frustrating fans, right? That you're watching this thing saying, Coach.
You have a lead.
And
build on it.
He's admitting that, yeah, I go a little conservative here. I want to see us execute a basic play that I know we're good at. We work on this all the time. We rep it all the time. Let's run this and execute it just like we did in the first half. And,
once you get tired in the fourth quarter,
start
getting outside the box, and your center, who I think is still going to be a great center, starts double hitching the ball, and now it's first and 15.
Yeah.
And things change. Your play calling changes.
Yeah, and that
it makes you conservative. It doesn't make you throw the ball down the field. You don't want to throw that ball down the field when it's first and 15. You get nervous. But sometimes you guess what you have to do because – they know generally what your first and 15 run is going to be. Bijan's going off tackle.
Well, you can't. It's kind of like a pitcher in baseball, right? If you don't have a good feel for your off speed stuff, you can't just start grooving fastballs, right? You can't just start throwing it right down the middle like Framber was last night. You gotta give yourself a chance. And I think that's what fans are saying. I think what we'll see if Sark does change his stripes a little bit. That you know he wants to. He's just said that I need to evaluate differently, come fourth quarter, be a more aggressive, go outside the box
a little
bit.
Yeah, he's got to be a greedy guy.
Yeah.
You've got some players that can do that for you. But I think he's still nervous about a quarterback just getting to play this position as a starter, that he's afraid to have him take chances of throwing that ball down the field.
Remember the first half against Oak State when they were crowding the line and the big play to Marcus Washington got up over the top with – I mean, it was zero high coverage. I mean, there was nothing back there. And Washington got behind the corner, and it was a pretty easy pitch and catch for a big play. Well, they didn't try that one time in the fourth quarter when Oklahoma State was mugging the line. It's like, guys, they're all up on you. Somebody win an individual battle, get off the line, and throw it up over the top. Create a big play here. And that's where, you know, I think
he gets nervous that those guys don't win those individual batters late in games.
Or they're not going to pick up the free rusher. Quarterback's going to take a pop.
You need to know this. If you rush Baylor's quarterback, he's going to take off and run. He's not looking to throw the ball down the field. He can take off, and he's really good as a runner. He's not like Casey. He's a much better runner than Casey is. I mean, he's got speed. He's like a running back taking off with the football. And if you put pressure on him, that's where he's going. He's going to start taking off and running with the football.
Yeah.
Now you got your guys who have been head duckers lately.
Head duckers.
Trying to tackle him in the fourth quarter. So because Texas will come after him early because that's what they do. And that's how you build those leads. That's how PK's defense looks so good when you're taking those chances early, the same chances you don't take late because you don't trust your guys will make the tackles.
It's both sides of the ball in the fourth quarter. There's no question, and it's complimentary.
Yeah,
complements the other negatively.
If you're exciting and getting after guys early, then you should be the same way late in games. You got to be able to take those. You got to trust that your players will make the tackles. If a quarterback takes off and goes, you got to trust it that B.J. Foster is not going to duck his head, or some of those guys in the secondary are going to make solid tackles and come up and make the plays.
So coming up next hour, as we mentioned, guest heavy, we're going to have Howard Griffith, your former player that you coached at Illinois, but now doing great work at the Big Ten Network. Big Ten taking center stage this week in college football.
He was always ready to go in the fourth quarter because he was tired in the
Big
first
Howard.
Quarter. Because he was always tired by halftime. He was exhausted.
Howard was because you guys kept giving him the ball.
Oh, I kept giving him the damn ball.
Now, in the NFL, he's a fullback, but he was a tailback for you.
Yeah, he was a single back guy. He was like Ricky playing single back, but he also was a fullback in two back sets.
Mm.
And so he had to pass protect, so he had to get it. And he was a part of the pass game. He had great hands.
We will ask Howard Griffith about the Michigan-Michigan State game in East Lansing on Saturday.
Ask him what he thinks of Ohio State right now, too.
Ohio State figuring it out. They've gone ahead and given the ball to their freshman running back, Travion Henderson.
Yeah, they give it to him in first and fourth quarters. Stop giving it to him.
Quite the comment in the Big Ten. We've also got that Penn State game against Ohio State, which set up to be a showdown top 10 matchup at Penn State. Didn't hold up their end last week against Illinois, so we'll ask him about the James Franklin situation and where that stands. You see where James Franklin switched agencies this week, which is interesting.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, James Franklin was represented by Trace Armstrong. And we know Trace Armstrong, the former NFL player, who also represents Tom Herman, represented Ed Orgeron, and many others in college football. Now James Franklin has left the Trace Armstrong agency to go to CAA.
Yeah, and if there's any alums out there at USC that have that check, that big checkbook, blank check, I think James Franklin will take it if you make it big enough.
Never say never, but never.
Never, Mike Tomlin.
That's for Mike Tomlin. Mike Tomlin, the Rooneys love him. He loves the Rooneys. And he's the coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers. There's nothing better than that.
You don't walk away from the Steelers. No. Come on, man. No, but
not for a college job, you know.
Yes. Well, James Franklin, changing his agent and jumping in with Jimmy Sexton here this week has people wondering if he's eyeing the LSU job. Jimmy Sexton is kind of the agent of the SEC. Nick Saban, many others, and Kirby Smart, and the top guys in the Southeastern Conference, Dan Mullen. So he's kind of the SEC agent. So is there an LSU connection here? And because that'd be interesting. If I'm James Franklin, I'm looking to leave
Penn State. James Franklin is cheese steaks, hamburgers, and some hot dogs. I don't think he's jambalaya.
But he knows that those athletes there are really good.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
They're on top of each other in the state of Louisiana. And if you can stack them, you can compete with anybody in the country.
Stack them and rack them for sure.
And, it's...
But it's got to be that way at USC, doesn't it? I mean, the way things are going with Seattle, Pete Carroll, will college football let Pete Carroll back in? Is he allowed to come back in, or does he have something hung over his head that he's got a year to sit out of coaching?
I've not heard that name. I mean, Pete Carroll's 71 years old. I don't know that if you're looking to... I mean, Pete Carroll at 51, I'm all in, right? And that's what USC did. They hired him, and he built the dynasty at USC.
But they've been still trying to build since he left, right?
At USC, yeah. Well, that's a rearview mirror situation right there. I'm looking for USC. You got to find a coach that can unite that base and lead you moving forward.
So you think Pete Carroll at his age is going into the sunset to hang out at the beach?
Yeah,
probably.
He's made a ton of money. He's won a Super Bowl.
Right.
He's won a national championship.
He screwed up a Super Bowl.
I don't know that, that seems like a Band-Aid for Pete Carroll. But at the same time, you have an opportunity as the new AD out there at USC and down at LSU to land your coach of the future. I'm not saying it's easy. I mean, Texas has been trying to nail the coach of the future for a while now.
Right.
And USC's in the same boat with this hire, and so is LSU now with that Orgeron going to be departing. So we'll ask Howard about that. Is James Franklin up to snuff for that position, and will he take it? Also, the two big games in the Big Ten this week. Also, Chris Beard will join us next hour. Chris Beard. Normally, we talk to Chris on Thursdays, but the coach has asked to move to Wednesday this week because of a recruiting trip he's got tomorrow. And speaking of the recruiting side, we'll ask him about the behind-the-scenes look at the story of his assistant coach Coach Maligi, who jumped out of an airplane, I guess as a promise to a recruit. Think he'll give us the details on that? The 411, the intel?
Yeah, he's going to say that guy's nuts.
That guy's nuts. But Chris Beard will join us next hour as well. Also, Isaiah Collier will walk us through the hot or not topics, things we've missed halfway through the show here coming up as we get you ready and primed for Game 2 of the World Series tonight. Also getting you ready for college and pro football weekend. It really gets going tomorrow night with a good one. There is a report out there from our friend John McClain of the Houston Chronicle that the Deshaun Watson trade to Miami is a done deal as far as the compensation, that the two sides have agreed on here's what we want for the trade, and that the Dolphins have said yes to that, and that the owner, Stephen Ross, has said yes to that, but Stephen Ross is holding up the deal because he's looking for some legal assurances and some other things. We'll keep an eye on that story because Tuesday, 6 days out to the NFL's trade deadline, we'll see if that gets done. Also, other trades that could get done between now and Tuesday in the National Football League. That's all coming, part of a busy Wednesday, dragging you up over the hump on 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
What's hot? And what's not?
This segment brought to you by Altstadt Beers, brewed right here in the heart of the Hill Country. Check out their state-of-the-art brewery, tap room, and restaurant next time you're in Fredericksburg. Altstadt Beers, no impurities, no regrets.
Not on this Wednesday. The hot is gone. The temperature is dropping. It'll be a beautiful afternoon and rest of the week with cooler, more fall-like conditions. We'll take that. Also, this is hot. Buddy Jason on the text line reminds us that today, Buck, is the day that our favorite HEB employee, Ofi, the Monarch,
cuts the ribbon.
Will be cutting the ribbon at the new Southwest HEB location out there. Yeah, by
I got to hit their pharmacy to get some... there's some medication that I'll be needing here over the next 30 days.
That thing's already open, right? They're just doing the whole ribbon cutting thing?
Right.
Fun. You've been in that HEB?
I have not been there yet. No.
Check it out. Also hot and not, as we get this thing rolling, we got Isaiah Collier, our producer. I went to CB on Twitter. He is our assistant producer and technical director. He sent us a picture, actually a TikTok video that is spreading around the interwebs, of Patrick Mahomes' fiance and brother doing a TikTok dance. And in the background, you see Patrick Mahomes like sitting in a chair, just kind of chilling like, I hate my life. My brother and my wife are doing TikTok dances.
Yeah.
I've committed 11 turnovers.
His brother's 6 pounds of butter and at least a case of Splenda dancing.
Mahomes?
Yeah. There's lots of butter and Splenda in his dance. I'll tell you that right now, if you know what I mean.
I know. You know what do they say? Picture's worth 1,000 words, but right. A TikTok video might be worth more because this video...
I think if you go and scream in his ear, he'll fall down and just start crying.
His wife's doing like the twerking dance.
Now, his wife's in great shape.
She's in good shape.
Yeah.
But he is like oblivious to it. And no, kind of like, this is my life. I'm trying to play quarterback and these idiots are putting out TikTok videos.
Yeah. I mean, he's one of... what's her name's dancers?
J-Lo?
J-Lo's dancers.
Fly girls?
I think he's one of the fly boys.
Yeah, my homie's like, Reed's all up my rear. I'm turning the football over. We're 3-4.
I got my brother TikToking all over the place and my wife now. They're not married yet again still, right? My fiance.
Still fiance.
This 12-second video has 1.5 million views.
Seriously?
Yes.
They're not there to see that dude dance, I guarantee you. They're to see that booty. That's what they're
And there's my homie's just like, come on, man. Just look what I put it up with here.
See, that's why people need to start taking the Aaron Rodgers route. Drop your brother. You don't need your family. Start switching out women like Dusty Baker switches out toothpicks, and then you'll be good.
No, you need your family.
No, you don't. Clearly you don't.
You just need to tell your brother that you need... But you can't tell a grown man what to do. I mean,
I think I'm starting to see this, Zay. I think the problem for Patrick, his fiance, it's like her best friend is his brother.
And once he drops,
like they're like pals.
And once he drops that real
terrible,
and once he drops that real I do on her, then that all that stuff right there will probably stop. That'll come to an end, I believe. But you can't stop his brother. His brother's making his cash off of him.
Yikes.
Right?
Unbelievable. Also, speaking of football,
because he's not making it, he's making zero money off his dancing ability.
He's not a good dancer.
No.
Zay, what do you have for us? What have we missed there, sugar? Sugar britches?
Sugar-coated over there.
Oh, this man said Splenda. All right, fellas. The Ravens got drove by the Bengals this past weekend.
They sure did.
And people were wilding up by the Ravens radio press box. A lady went or tried to get up in there, and I got the audio for you fellas.
Uh-oh.
Had to modify it a little bit because these guys just went 20 seconds with dead air because they had to address the situation, but take a listen. Okay, maybe I don't have the audio right now.
Computer
maybe,
froze.
Maybe you got the dead air. The dead air
so
is right
So somebody
here.
Tried to bum rush their broadcast booth? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. So picture some woman. It was a woman. She said that she's a veteran and needed beer or something like that.
I need beer.
Yeah, and then she just tried to bum rush the press box where the Ravens play-by-play guy was trying to work.
Trying to do his gig. All right,
he should have just got her what she wanted, beer. Get her beer.
Somebody get her some beer.
Yeah.
Jeez Louise.
It's the ballpark. Somebody's got a beer somewhere.
Get her some booze.
Yeah. Come on now.
Yeah. Ravens, interesting team. Interesting team at 5-2. But I did not see that. I'm not hot on people bum-rushing broadcast booths. Did that ever happen to you in a high school game when you and Mark Honig are calling the Lake Travis football games and people trying to bum-rush you at the Burger Center or something?
No. No.
Banging down the door?
They're banging down the door trying to get me my nachos. Trying to get my fix in there to me.
Gotta get your fix. Ravens at 5-2. How about the Cincinnati Bengals? If the playoffs began today, which they don't, Bengals would have the number one seed in the AFC at 5-2. Zay now has the audio of the bum rushing broadcast booth. Whoops. All right.
Something's wrong with the computer.
Wrong with our computer. This says, cut it out, brah. Yeah, that's what Mahomes needs to say to his brother. Hey, brah, cut it out.
Okay, finally got it. Here we go.
Never say never, okay?
Boyd has it for a short gain out to the 34-yard line. Again, impressive coverage by Anthony Avery.
What are you doing?
Third down and six.
What are you doing?
Third down and six along the defensive front. Burrow in the shotgun.
Pressure coming. He's flushed.
Ravens bunch six along the defensive front. Burrow takes the snap. Blitz pressure coming. He's flushed from the pocket. Throws deep. Near side. It is broken up. Complete at the 40-yard line. T. Higgins was the target. Anthony Averett had great coverage. And that is going to force the punt team on. If you were listening, you heard Femi say, what are you doing? What are you doing? He was not talking to the players or the coaches. We actually had a fan who was trying to climb into the broadcast booth.
Oh, from the front.
She said, I'm a veteran and I'm looking for a drink.
Yeah, I don't serve drinks at the game. I might make some cocktails at home, but this is not the right time or place.
You just never know what's going to pop up or who's going to show up on game day.
There we go.
Never say never.
The veteran probably thought she was climbing into a luxury box or something. That's where they got the booze.
The sweet life.
Sweet life.
Come on,
man. Give me a Bud Light.
Get that lady.
What are you doing?
Get that lady her drink, please.
That's funny. Good job, Zay. Good stuff right there. All right, there's your hot or not topics. We've also got guests coming. We got Howard Griffith, Big Ten Network, on our other side of this timeout. After our headlines, previewing the big weekend in the Big 12. Is Michigan State or Michigan going to win that game in East Lansing? Also, is Ohio State, despite a loss earlier this year to Oregon, still the best team in the Big Ten? We'll ask him those questions. And Chris Beard, head basketball coach at UT, will join our show at 8:25. Part of a loaded Wednesday on B&E, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260, streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.